You are listening to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly discussion of the precious metals markets and the markets closely associated with the metals. I'm Rob, alongside Miles. And between the two of us, we have over 60 years of experience advising on and brokering the precious metals. So each week, we provide a technical analysis with market charts and cover the underlying fundamentals and the news that helps move and predict these markets. If you want to see the charts, we would recommend you go to our website, McIlvaney.com/news, and you'll see everything that we're posting. Without any further ado, Miles, let's take a look at the charts and see what we got so far this week.
Sure. Well, I've got to toss a little bit of ado out. I'm impressed with your intro read, Rob, because you had to bob and weave on the fly because we are without Tory this week. So your ability to take his name out of the intro while simultaneously redoing the math of the longevity that you and I have been sitting in the office together is pretty impressive. So Tory, we miss you, buddy. I hope you catch a show this week and we'll see you back here next week. Appreciate it, Rob. Yeah, let's go ahead and jump into the metals. Not too much to talk about this week. Pause for laugh track. There it is.
Right. Except for we are breaking out of that pennant. We've been talking about the pennant now for a couple of months, and we officially broke out of that pennant last week, and we are off to the races.
Yeah, so let's dig into the nitty-gritty here over the last week. And then, yeah, I think we'll probably just take some time. And since we're finally seeing some action we haven't seen in a while, probably just chat about the charts a little bit. So kicking it off with gold, gold up 4.5% since our recording last week, which isn't out of the ordinary for gold. We've seen some weeks where it'll put 3, 4, 5, 6% on up or down. But what is out of the ordinary is that's taken us to new highs, which we've inched back from, but gold currently sitting at 3,564 at the time I'm putting my charts together. So that puts gold firmly placing its foot right on the stair step that is 3,500 and looking forward to see how far that stairway goes as we move into the fall. So quick glance over at silver, not to be outdone, but in fact quite the opposite. Silver up 6.2% since our recording last week. That brings silver well up above $41. We're now at $41.24. It's also back down a few inches here in the last 24 hours, but very strong week for silver. Oh, it keeps getting better, Rob. Let's move over to platinum. Platinum up 7.2%. That brings platinum back up to 1440. Now, we're not at the highs platinum had put in previously, but certainly working its way back there. We talked about the really nice deep correction in platinum, and maybe we'll glance at that a little more as platinum is potentially making a run at another, not all-time, but at least recent high here over the next couple of weeks. Because it's always fun to do so, we also like to look at some of the other precious metals surrounding gold, silver, platinum. So we like to look at palladium as well. It's a great sister metal to platinum. And like a kid sister, it's trying to keep up with platinum, up about 6.5% since our recording last week. And a little bit shorter, as the kid sister tends to be, currently sitting at $1,163. Glance over to the paper markets. And a surprising change of pace, Rob. So I am a little shocked when I was looking at the S&P earlier today. I was kind of expecting the S&P to also be keeping up with gold. But the S&P is only up about 1% on the last week and sort of languishing. It had a run up, a run down, and kind of ended up right in the middle, sitting at 6,450. At our time of recording. And finally, if everything's up, Rob, what's the dollar doing?
It's a little weaker.
Yeah. Now, here's the fun thing about that rhetorical question there. It was a rigged question because technically the dollar is also up from our last recording. It is up 0.08%. Normally, I would just say that that's even, but I thought it was funny that it's an everything up week. Although, if you look at the chart of the dollar over the last couple of weeks, it's clearly in a downtrend. It just happened to be at a position where it was relatively even here midweek as we record on Wednesday afternoons for Golden Rule Radio. So, across the board, the equities market really not seeing the big run we would have expected, given the discussion we had following the Jackson Hole meeting and our expectation for interest rate changes. You know, Rob, my expectation has been that in the anticipation of what everybody is hoping the next Fed meeting is going to be, I was figuring we were watching the markets kind of price in what the expected interest rate change would end up being. But yeah, that may not necessarily be the case. So I think that leads us to the question, what's up with gold?
Well, there's a lot of things up with gold. First of all, you've got India unloading treasuries at the beginning of the summer. They're upping their gold holdings considerably. So is China. So are the Saudis. And I know the government wants to keep those treasuries intact and redivert that money into infrastructure. I'm not sure if the BRICS nations are going to play along. We may have to pull out the tariff club and beat them up a little. But in the meantime, the federal government is signaling they want to run hot. They want to spur the economy. They want lower interest rates. They're even talking about intervening in the housing market, calling it a national emergency. But, you know, they bought 10% of Intel just the other day. They are giving NVIDIA permits to sell their services to China for a 15% royalty. So the government is doing everything they can to stimulate and get money into the treasury to help offset the deficit. I just don't see the government cutting spending. Maybe they will, but they want to run hot, Miles. And I think institutional money is shifting towards gold. If you look at the ETFs this week alone, $1.5 billion today went into ETF GLD. So that's back up to where it was 2 years ago before the sell-off in gold in 2023. So institutional money is shifting to gold. Foreign governments are shifting to gold. You have big players buying gold right now.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And that's been a discussion we've been having here throughout the course of this year, going back to the end of last year, where we started to notice this increase of sovereign bank gold holdings increasing.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I know we went through this chart probably back in like April-ish, when we were kind of right in the middle of the last big gold run up. But if I'm not mistaken, we looked at this 60-year period where if you go back to the 60s prior to Nixon closing the gold window in 1972 and taking us from the gold standard to the fiat / OPEC-ish military-backed currency that we've been in for the last 50 years.
The petrodollar.
Yeah, internationally, you saw sovereign bank gold holdings going from 100% of currency backing all the way down to, I think, in the late 90s, early 2000s, it got as low as like 9%. The expectation of using gold as a backing towards your national sovereign currency, obviously, we tried this experiment. Well, lo and behold, over the last 20 years, that percentage has now risen back up into the mid to high 20% range. And as you just pointed out, still rising. Yeah. 26, 27, 28%. Well, you mentioned China. I know China has now increased their gold percentage 10 months in a row, which is kind of unheard of. China's always been a significant buyer of the yellow metal as an alternative to the staggering amount of U.S. debt that they currently own and U.S. dollars that they also own. China doesn't want the U.S. to default any more than we do because mm-hmm. they own a fair bit of it. I mean, it would be catastrophic for them as well, just as an owner. Nobody wants their car to die, whether you're the one driving it or not. If you're the one that owns it, you got to pay to fix it. On top of that, we're also seeing these new avenues. And we talked about this a lot last week, Rob, this idea that we may be looking at some additional international investment moving in a different way back into the United States through, say, the sovereign wealth fund.
Right. Or investing directly into U.S. infrastructure, mm-hmm. all of which will pay royalties back to the Treasury. The United States used to be the safe haven of the world, but now we're open for business. They want to monetize the national wealth of the country. We talked about that last week. Lutnick is thinking it's around $500 trillion is what the U.S. government owns in assets, and they want to monetize that.
So define monetize.
let's say you and I build our company. Let's say we sell gold and we want to go public. So we go to a firm like what Lutnick used to run, Cantor Fitzgerald, and he would take a look at our business and how much we're worth, and then they would sell stock of our company to private individuals and corporations to invest in us. That's going public. Well, that's kind of what they want to do with the wealth of the United States, is to make it not just give you a permit to cut timber or give you a license to sell your computer software and computer chips abroad. They want a piece of the action. So they'll give you a permit to open up your gold mine for a 15 or 20% royalty. That's what they're doing. So we're not permitting private businesses now. We want part of the action.
So help this make sense for me, because I know you've got a couple more weeks or months than I do going through this stuff. So when you brought up earlier the idea of some of this additional investment coming from the government specifically into private business here, so like you mentioned Intel.
Bought a 10% stake, yeah.
Intel, massive government agreement, taking a 9.9% stake in Intel.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an $8 or $9 billion in grants that Intel was slated to receive under like CHIPS, the Science Act, and obviously all that coming off the budget sheet of the defense programs. So now the gentleman's agreement, I would assume, is, hey, silent partner, right? I mean, we're the government. We can't possibly get involved in the day-to-day actions of a private industry.
Right. They're not going to take a seat on the board of Intel. They're going to be, like you said, a silent partner, and they'll be receiving royalty payments. Just like, you know, the Pentagon announced that they have become the largest shareholder in a mining company called MP Materials. Okay. Why? Well, because that's a rare earth supply chain and the Pentagon needs that. So they're moving into what's traditionally been the private sector to secure strategic minerals, etc. You name it, they're going to be moving into it. We'll see what else they do.
Well, and there was also the involvement into U.S. Steel.
That's right. Kind of a, yeah, I forgot
kind of
about
staple
that.
Staple here in the United States.
Yeah.
A staple of the United States, literally called U.S. Steel. Everybody has heard of U.S. Steel. It's been around for forever. And part of the reason the government is getting involved is to
keep it
help ease an acquisition of U.S. Steel by Japan's Nippon Steel.
Right.
So we're seeing a transition. So follow my logic here and tell me if I'm just being paranoid. We're seeing a period here where we're seeing additional government intervention into private business via, let's say, traditional means of the government acting like an individual or a corporation and speaking with its wallet by coming in and buying the shares of this company or monetizing the value, like you explained a minute ago, coming in and buying up a percentage share. On the other side of that transaction, we're also discussing opening up a sovereign wealth fund, which allows investment into the U.S. government,
right,
who's going out and doing all of this. But that opens the door to foreign investment as well.
Well, it's an off-ramp for all the treasury holdings held by foreign banks and foreign governments. So off-ramp out of the treasuries into the sovereign wealth of the United States for a share of the income.
Right. So basically, since we can't repay the debt in value of currency, we're repaying the debt in the value of the businesses within the infrastructure of the country.
Well, we could print money.
Well, I think China's fed up with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that only works for so long.
Or we can default. I remember when President Trump, when he was first running for his first term, said, well, we can always default. I just like, no, that's how wars get started.
Right.
Or you could just let the markets crash and we go into a depression. So I don't know what other options they have. I think they're pulling out all the stops. You know, we are well past time to try to get a handle on this. So we are in a mess. People know it. And I think that's why so much money is moving to gold. I know I was talking to one of my largest clients today about the government investing in, you know, the MP Materials, into U.S. Steel, Intel. And her thought was, well, why don't I just invest in those companies if the government's going to be there I should put some of my money there too. But if you look at NVIDIA today, they had a bad day today. So it's not a guarantee that these companies are going to continue to go higher, basically because governments traditionally are not the best managers in the world. But since they're not taking an active share in management, I don't know if that's a credible thing to say.
So I was just a couple years in getting my metals career started because I came here in 2005. And a couple years after 2005, something kind of big happened when almost the entire financial system collapsed on the backs of these fascinating derivative products we decided to build.
Right.
But what's interesting that I remember about that, Rob, is, man, people lost their minds. Mm-hmm. When the government stepped in and said, hey, we cannot let these particular institutions that we have decided are, quote unquote, too big to fail. Mm-hmm. How is this just not doing the too big to fail thing before they start to fail?
Well, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, they injected a lot of capital into the banking system and into Wall Street to provide funding for them to shore up their own business. But now the government is buying into the businesses themselves, wanting royalty back in return. So it's a little different. I don't know how far we can get into the weeds on this, but the government is now acting as an investor, not as a banker, which may be arguably the same thing. But a lot of these companies that the U.S. put money into, especially in the green energy sector, have folded and gone away.
Well, we can all thank Bill Clinton back in 1999 when he repealed Glass-Steagall.
Oh, golly.
You don't have to differentiate between investor and banker. You can be both now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so the government is now both the banker that produces the money and the investor that chooses where they're going to spend it. I don't see how this provides us anything but maybe a short-term return while we're selling the whole house out from underneath us.
Well, they're not selling the land. They're not selling the buildings. They're not selling the minerals themselves. So America is not for sale. America is now open for business. I think the Trump administration, in spite of the criticism that we hear every day, I think they are well-intentioned, but you know, people like Bessent and Trump and Lutnick, come on, they're going to become very wealthy because they are now sitting in a position where they are controlling so much wealth, not just the money coming in and out of the federal government, but the wealth of the nation itself, which begs the question, what about the next guy or the guy Yep. after him or the lady after them? At some point, somebody's going to come in and take those reins of power. I only hope that we have safeguards to keep this from turning ugly.
Yeah, and a revolution is never kind to those who started it. My big concern is things always look good at first, and the end result may end up being way off from where you were initially aiming.
Well, it's a great deal of power, a great deal of control, a great deal of wealth.
Yeah, one would say a great deal of power comes a great deal of responsibility.
Yeah, and I do think this administration is well-intentioned. They have proven that over and over again in spite of all the criticism.
What do you do to ensure?
The reason why you see so much money moving into gold, especially today, is because nobody likes uncertainty and everybody has the best hope that everything will work out and we'll be able to get a handle on this terrible problem of debt that this nation has. But money is moving to gold because there's not debt. It's not somebody else's obligation. It's just been money for thousands of years. You're just seeing it happening right in front of you. That's where a huge amount of money is going. Not all of the money, but people are upping their percentages dramatically. Big companies, big governments, big banks, they are steadily buying large chunks of gold, and it's happening now in the U.S. as well as Europe and China.
Yeah, and that's something that we haven't seen in a while. I mean,
No.
We've been talking about the growth in precious metals, the growth in gold, which has been great in the U.S. dollar. since 2020, post-COVID, really since about 2017. But those first couple hundred dollars don't really get people's attention. The next 1,000 or 1,500 certainly do. While we've been watching this in the United States, something we have tried to point out for the last couple of years is, as good as things look in terms of U.S. dollars, gold in Japanese yen is screaming. Gold in Chinese yuan, gold in Indian rupee. You start looking at some of the international positions, and gold was breaking into all-time highs in other currencies long before it did in the U.S. dollar. So it seems like the U.S. dollar has a little bit of catch-up to do here in the precious metals market, and it's interesting to see that this might be starting to happen. So from a chart perspective, since a couple minutes left here, so let's maybe do take a little glance at the precious metals more specifically, especially gold, because we are coming in on this big breakout top. So Rob, you got me on this one for the last month or two as I've been watching this go. I'm like, man, you know, my argument has been this: the longer a pause lasts, the more likely it's a continuation. I will say I have been saying that for months. However, if we go back to like April or May, I probably would have been more inclined to say, yeah, by July, August, September, there's a good chance after scraping 34, almost 3,500 at one point.
To see it back up, back to 2,800.
Yeah, 2,850 would have been a perfectly reasonable return.
Didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen. But there does come a time where sentiment shifts in a bull market.
Yeah.
Where people stop looking at the price and they start thinking about the reason they want it.
Yeah.
And when you want to own something for a purpose, like if you have a need for something, you don't care what the price is.
Correct. And that's what you see happening internationally right now. They really don't care. Yeah. They really don't. Here's a chunk, buy this. Here's a big pile of green paper. How much can I get?
There's still going to be a collection of people during the transition period when gold goes from the beginning stages of a bull market, which is based on price relevance and supply and demand and so on and so forth. Then you move into just a buying frenzy, which eventually ends in an over-exuberance top. Who knows where and when that is? Doesn't matter what that number is. We'll see it when we see it some point down the road. Correct. But what does it look like when the market goes from rational to irrational? And is there anything you can do to actually take advantage of that?
Boy, that's a great question. It's been so long since we've seen an irrational gold market. You have to go back to the late 70s, early 80s, with silver and gold becoming completely irrational.
And I don't think we're there, and maybe we never get there. I think there's some good arguments that gold is still just seeking accurate pricing based on the inflation over the last number of decades. I mean, you go to priced in gold, you look at the real inflation rate as calculated from the 70s, you do the math, and realistically, if we're looking at gold at the same purchasing power as it was in 1975, gold double, triple from where it is now, just to be in line of realistic purchasing value. So gold still has a long way to go, fairly. I just don't know what it ends up looking like if the general public ends up getting involved chasing after something and they don't care what the price is.
Well, that's happened with Bitcoin. We remember when Bitcoin was just a few dollars. Now it's over 100,000. At what point does that become irrational? I don't know. But we're nowhere close for gold.
No.
Could we see $100,000 gold? I don't know. But how can Bitcoin be 100,000 and gold still be less than 4,000? So we'll see how that all works out. You know, and maybe silver is going to break 42 and we can get past 50 and into the 60s, like we've all been hoping for. But yeah, we're not going backward. And the market has passed up a lot of people who are waiting for a big pullback and then I'm going to buy. I don't think you should be waiting for pullbacks right now. If you have money on the sidelines, you need to up your percentage within reason, but buy some more because it's not going back down for a while.
Well, Rob, I think it's definitely a time whenever you see markets moving to take a step back and just look at, okay, what's really the underlying issue here? And I appreciate it because it's helpful for me to step away from the chart sometimes and my expectations about, like, say, interest rates and dollars and financing and all that. Just say, okay, this is gold specific, what's happening right now, which means there's a reason for it. So I think looking at some of these underlying expectations and the buying that's taking place internationally, I just want to get insured.
Yep.
You know, I just want to insure my assets, my financial future, and move forward. And I think that's why I've enjoyed making sure that metals was a position in my portfolio for so long. So here's my transition. I hope you guys liked it. If you'd like to talk with one of the advisors here about ensuring your financial future, I'd highly recommend give Rob, myself, Tori, or any of the advisors here at McIlvenny Precious Metals a call. You can always reach us at 1-800-525-9556. As Rob mentioned earlier, if you'd like to catch this video or any of our podcasts or other material we put out every week, you can find us at McIlvenny.com. That's McIlvenny.com. We're also on Twitter at ICA Gold and Facebook at McIlvenny Financial. Thanks again for joining us. We hope you have a great week.